Hey lovers and listeners, whether you're celebrating Christmas, Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, or nothing at all, we have a little holiday special for you with our favorite books we read in the year 2019 by Black women and women of color authors. Lean back and enjoy for this special episode.
All right, lovers, followers, friends, sexy people out there, we are here today to celebrate some amazing writers that we've been reading. Sarah and myself are very big book lovers, and we sort of naturally realized that we were reading less and less white authors, which have been one of the best things in our lives, really. And so you just want to share real quick our journey and recommend your babes with some beautiful, interesting, talented, super relevant, contemporary, older, brilliant books to offer around you, to offer to yourself, and to make sure you fill in all of your bookshelves with.
So we just earlier we talked about how we are often reading essays, manifestos, very intense works that also take a lot of effort from you. Then we said that actually it's very political to have fun and to just dive into a novel and just enjoy it. And also there can be novels that are just very joyful and don't feel like you actually have to do a lot of work by reading them, but that are just extremely political in itself. And I have a couple of novels that are like that, that I would like to celebrate in this episode. So yeah, I think we should cut ourselves some slack and not always feel the need to read something that is basically work again, but also just enjoy and indulge into literature. And this year, I'm actually very proud of myself because I didn't read one single white male author. Ta-da! But, right? No, but I really enjoyed many brilliant, fantastic stories of women of color authors and Black women authors. And one of my absolute favorites this year was Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi, who is an American Nigerian author who wrote this New York bestseller at the age of 24 and who describes this great piece as basically think Black Panther with magic, which is just amazing. And it's an epic story of a girl fighting to bring back magic to her people. That was, so it's an adventure, but it's also extremely painful in a way because, and I think it can be quite triggering because it's all in a magical world where this girl is fighting to bring back magic to her people that was brutally stripped away from her generations ago. There was a genocide where all adults who had the power of magic were killed, and only the kids who didn't yet have their powers were spared, but are now living without that magical connection to their ancestors and live an extremely a life in poverty and hardships and under oppression until magic comes back. The story has such a great pace. It just directly draws you into it. And it's a world of fantasy full of African gods and goddesses where magic once reigned. But at the same time, it's so allegorical for the racism and oppression that Black people experience today in our world every day. And at times it feels like this magical world of this young, powerful girl is so far away from ours, only to then realize that it's actually exactly what's happening in our world. And that makes it even more soul-crushing, but also even more powerful. I have a quick quote that I could read out, because in the end of this really beautiful book is an author's note from Tomi Adeyemi, where she's telling how this story is something from her personal world and how she dealt with it by writing this book. So the author's note says, "I shed many tears before I wrote this book. Many tears as I revised it. And even as it sits in your hands now, I know that I will shed tears again. Although riding giant lionairs and performing sacred rituals might be in the realm of fantasy, all the pain, fear, sorrow, and loss in this book is real. Children of Blood and Bone was written during a time where I kept turning on the news and seeing stories of unarmed Black men, women, and children being shot by the police. I felt afraid and angry and helpless, but this book was the one thing that made me feel like I could do something about it. I told myself that if just one person could read it and have their hearts or minds changed, then I would have done something meaningful against a problem that often feels so much bigger than myself. Let this book be proof to you that we can always do something to fight back. As Zeli, the protagonist, says in the ritual, we are all children of blood and bone. And just like Zelly and Amari, we have the power to change the evils in the world. We've been knocked down for far too long. Now let's rise. And that was just so powerful. And just like, I really got goosebumps. And it was a fantastic read. And the second part will be published in December. And I cannot wait for the sequel. Go and get it as soon as you can. This got a five-star rating, definitely.
The first book that I'd like to talk to you all about was written by Grada Quilomba, who I'm sure a lot of you would know or the name would ring a bell. She is a Portuguese writer and artist with origins from Angola and São Tomé. And my mama happens to be from Angola and her dad happens to be from São Tomé, so that's very special. She's also a psychologist, theorist, and interdisciplinary artist whose work critically examines memory, trauma, gender, racism, and post-colonialism. And I read Plantations Memory from Grada Quilomba. And it was very special because I read it in Portuguese. That translates to Memórias da Plantação. And actually the book, so Portuguese is Grada's native language, but the book was only translated last year in 2018, when the book was actually published in English and other languages in 2008. So it took 10 years to actually be translated in Portuguese, which to me speaks volume about the Portuguese society readiness to talk about these things. Plantations Memory is basically episodes of everyday racism. So I'm having still a little work to do in terms of not reading things that are ultra super very political. So bear with the sister. It's a really very powerful book. The cover of the book is actually reflecting sort of a mirror so that people can look themselves in a mirror when reading it, which I think is very powerful. And it's a compilation of episodes approaching racism as a psychological reality. So the description says, linking post-colonial theory, psychoanalysis, and poetic narrative, Grada provides a new and inspiring interpretation of everyday racism, memory, trauma, and decolonization in the form of short stories. From the question, where do you come from, to the N-word or hair politics, the book is essential to anyone studying African studies, post-colonialism, critical whiteness, and psychoanalysis. I think she's a very, very, very inspiring woman. I think her work has inspired actually tons of really great writers, artists that I follow and that I love very much. And yeah, basically, there's just a lot of different structure within the book that makes you go through all of the things that you were never able to verbalize, all of the things that you've been thinking about that you think maybe only happens to you in that city that you live in that country that you live in. But this really helps to reflect on everything in a very psychological level and understand that, number one, you're not crazy. Number two, it's a very structural thing that's going on. And also somehow taking distance from it, even though it feels very personal as you read all of the different stories. So like the description said, I think anybody who's interested in, you know, being in that journey of decolonizing your mind, if you're just interested in also having arguments when you debate with people, when you write things, and when you just want to discuss about these things, it's a very important piece to have with you. Grada Quilomba happens to be a very, very talented artist as well, so follow everything she does on Instagram. She exhibits in São Paulo, in Berlin, and pretty much all around the world, and she's really dope, so follow us, sister.
Awesome. Cool. I didn't know you could even read in Portuguese.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Takes me... twice the time though, especially because of the vocabulary is very academic, so yeah,
but twice the time is nothing. All right, so I read in English The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas this summer, which was, I think these are all books from 2018 and I just discovered them now. Well, discovering is pretty colonial. I just came across them now, so that means that you will probably, I mean, you're you gotta catch up with me. let's put it that way. So this book was just amazing. I read it in the summer in, I think, 2 days, because it was just such a brilliant book, just as the other one I was celebrating today. It's a young adult novel, and it has such a great pace too. It's about a 16-year-old black girl called Star, who is moving between two worlds. So her black community on the one side and her elitist white school, where she has to watch every move she makes to not be regarded as ghetto, on the other side. Also, this is a very difficult book in a way, because it's also very triggering and also has a lot of police brutality and systemic racism in it. So just consider this before you read the book, because this is basically how it already starts. first, like, she and her best friend Khalil are in a car one night after a party. They get pulled over by a policeman and he fatally shoots her friend, and Star has to watch him die in her arms, basically. And after that, the policeman and the media spin a story where her friend was a threat, a thug, a dealer whose life wasn't worth a dime anyways, and who was just threatening the police officer, which sparks an extreme uprising in the black community, who go out there and protest every day, all day. And Star is the only witness who was actually there and who saw what was happening in reality. And she's also the only one who can make it right if she dares to raise her voice. And so this is the story of the book. And it's just inspired by and full of references of Black Lives Matter, of Tupac Shakur, of the Black Panthers, their activism and philosophy. And it's just, it's so rich and so real. And so, like, Angie Thomas just really understood the texture of what it's like to be torn between two worlds, and the pressure of a media system that is just so interwoven by white supremacy, and how Star finds support in her family who always have her back. On the one hand, it's such a cruel and cold story. On the other one, it's such a beautiful portrayal of what support looks like, of the warm father that Star has, who has her back and who support her and stand and motivate her to stand up for herself and her community. It's really, it also, like, since then I've been listening to a lot of Tupac again, because it really changed my mind. The title is actually a reference to Tupac, and I'm going to read out this part where it's explained in the book. So Garden Heights, that is the community she's living in. Garden Heights has been a battlefield for the past 2 months over some stupid territory wars. I was born a queen because daddy used to be a king lord. But when he left the game, my street royalty status ended. But even if I'd grown up in it, I wouldn't understand fighting over streets nobody owns. Khalil blasts an old rap song daddy has played a million times. I frown. Why are you always listening to that old stuff? Man, get out of here. Tupac was the truth. Yeah, 20 years ago. Nah, even now. Like, check this. He points at me, which means he's about to go into one of his Khalil philosophical moments. Pac said thug life stood for the hate you give little infants fucks everybody. I raise my eyebrows. What? Listen, the hate you, the letter U, give little infants, fucks everybody. THUGLIFE. Meaning, what society gives us as youth, it bites them in the ass when we wild out. Get it? Damn, yeah. See? Told you he was relevant. And for me, it was just so intriguing how Angie Thomas, right, really, like, she does it with such an ease to take us on this journey where she's juggling with such deep radical thought of transforming society in such an accessible way, with so many references to Black culture, activism, philosophy. It's such a difficult story, but also so rich and so true and so beautiful. So go ahead and read it.
Beautiful!
Yeah, it really is.
Second book I'd like to celebrate was written by the most amazing, very talented, vocal, great activist, Black feminist, Jamila Ribeiro, who's so a Black Brazilian feminist, journalist, and philosopher. And among many other dope things, she wrote the preface of the book Woman, Race, and Class by Auntie Angela Davis for the translation and the first edition in Brazilian Portuguese. Jamila has collaborated with Angela Davis on a number of occasions. So just to give you a benchmark here of what we're talking about. She's a human rights activist and an author, and she was born in 1980 in Santos, in Brazil. She studied political philosophy in one of the best universities of Brazil. She happens to be great friend with Grada Quilomba, which I was so ecstatic about when I found out on Instagram. And it's actually, very, very sweet, because Jamila Ribeiro, as we say in Brazilian, used Grada Quilomba's work for her book herself. And yeah, they're basically inspiring each other, which I think is beautiful. I'm just always so excited and happy to see Black Sisterhood. So that's definitely one of them. So the book I want to talk about is called in French, Chronique du Féminisme Noir. So Chronicles of Black Feminism, which I think is a very diplomatic translation of the title, actually. The initial title in Portuguese says, Quem tem medo do feminismo negro? Which means, who's afraid of Black feminism? And that speaks to me much more. She's basically one of the most popular writers and public figures in the Afro-Brazilian women's rights movement today. She initially had a blog, which had hundreds of thousands of followers, and she regularly makes public appearances. I've had the luck to see her in Brussels 2 times, and she travels all over Europe regularly. So I encourage you to follow her work and to make sure you can actually catch her in one of her conferences, because it's really a delight. She's extremely calm, very charismatic, and it's just great to be able to listen to her wisdom. So, who's afraid of Black feminism? How to even describe? I think it's just an amazing compilation of punchlines. And what I mean by that is there's so many different arguments and aspects that she takes into consideration, and that's specific to the situation in Brazil. And to give you a little context, Brazil is one of the, I think, yeah, I don't know what's the ranking here, but it's definitely one of the most racist countries in the world and in South America. It is the second country in the world where you find most Black people. 52% of people in Brazil are Black. Yet they are the one who suffer the most from police brutality. They are the one who suffer the most in hospitals. They are the one who suffer the most from systemical racism. The wealth gap is huge, and there are just many, many, many issues when it comes to the treatment of Black people in Brazil. And Jamila Ribeiro is very vocal about all of these things, which means that today under the government of Bolsonaro, she's actually under a massive amount of threats. And it's very brave of her to keep on being vocal about things, and I'm very inspired by that. Just one thing, because I'm currently in a process of realizing and thinking how much bullshit lies into the fact that anything that basically all white men produce is seen as the standard and as great and as just so such an important work for everybody to read. There's this part on the book where she talks about specifically that. And bear with me, because I'm going to live translate from French to English, yes? The literature that white men produce is recognized as universal, when the one that's produced by women is seen as woman literature, quote unquote. Have you ever heard about masculine literature? These subcategories are created to hierarchize the arts and the knowledge. These individuals think that they're talking about universal things, whether we talk about something specific in, quote, our word, when it's actually the exact opposite. When we talk about ourselves, when we denounce how much this categorization, which has the basis white men, is wrong, we want to amplify universality so that it includes a greater number of possibilities of living. And I thought this was super powerful, because that's exactly the point. I've always thought to myself, all of the things that I was obliged to read at school, that I just could never relate to it. And a lot of the things that I found mediocre, everybody was like, no, but it's brilliant. And I was like, but is it though? Is it really? Mm-hmm. And this spoke volume to me, because I really think that we need to be redefining what is brilliant, what makes sense, what is contemporary, and what is universal, yeah? So that was super inspiring. And she touches on the problematic representation in carnival, in TV. She talks about how Black women athletes are treated in a much harsher way. She talks about the obsession with poverty in Brazil and how white people love to talk about poverty in a very romantic way. She talks about the problem in the favelas. She talks about police brutality and just so many other really powerful, important things. And it's very short. So it's basically a compilation of, like, you want to talk about this? Here's why it's wrong, or here's why this is important to be talked about. And yeah, I think it's basically just super inspiring and great for any Black sister who's starting a journey of feminism and deconstructing all of the things for yourself and realizing that you're not crazy. And this is what you can keep in mind whenever somebody tries you with any of that racist bullshit. And the intersectionality of her work and of her approach is really brilliant. And she, what I love about her as well, is that she always constantly cites other Black women. So philosopher, activist, writer, she constantly, literally in her work, in her interviews, when I saw her in Brussels, she's always dropping names. And I find that just so beautiful and such a great act of sisterhood.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly as you're saying, because I feel like we're, and this is probably the whole, like, roof of this episode that we are like redefining what is great literature, because the whole like choir of world literature today is mediocre white men pushing mediocre white men, and then you're supposed to love that, and if you don't see the point then you just don't understand art. But in reality, no, you haven't come across the real art that's there for you, which is like, for example, Toni Morrison. So I cannot stop talking about this documentary that I saw. By now, it's going to be 2 months ago. And it was really just so brilliant. The pieces I am, The Life About Toni Morrison, where Oprah is talking about her book club, where she has like tons of also like more mediocre, more chill authors. And in the middle of it, once you feel at rest and at ease in this book club, bam, Toni Morrison. This is exactly it, because she's just like, she has zero mercy with you, and that's a good thing. So on the first page, you have the whole plot of the story, and it's like a punch in the gut, and you can't stop, and it will never let you go. And then you read it as if you're having a fever, and you want to get to the root of all this terror and rawness. And afterwards, it's just like an extremely brutal roller coaster, but it was so important and necessary to get to the truth and to the core of it. And this is Toni Morrison for me. And she actually... In the documentary, so she was also teaching how to write in creative writing classes, and there she is like, don't tell me about your little life. Don't write about that. Nobody wants to hear about that. Just imagine being somebody who is on the margins. And for this book, for The Bluest Eye, she imagined the story of the most vulnerable, which is the story about a poor, ugly black girl, and how everybody is basically destroying and then abandoning her. And it is such a soul-crushing and gut-wrenching story, but it's such a nightmare, and then it's so true and it's so real, and it just captures the sense of what our society looks like, how terrible it can be, and how beautiful it can be, because then there are notions of sisterhood and friendship, and then also how these friends abandon you, and phew, it really is a roller coaster. But it was one of the best experiences I had this year, reading Toni Morrison. I really don't want to miss this. And actually, she also had such a great tip for how to write a novel, which is cool, because November was NaNoWriMo. That's National Novel Writing Month, that a friend, Margot, if you're listening, I hope you are, told me about, which is basically where people write novels together. The goal is to write 50,000 words by the end of the month, and everybody does this together over an app, and you can motivate each other and also track your progress. And it's really cool, because if you, like me, have always wanted to write a novel but have so many like storylines in your mind and can't really like figure out how to put them together to one thread of narrative, the thing is, you just sit down, you just have this goal in front of you, and you're just gonna write it. And all of a sudden, it all somewhat makes sense. That there was just such a cool and empowering structural experience for me. And now I'm gonna give you a quote from Toni Morrison that was really helpful for me. Knock off the white gaze. The little man's sitting on your shoulder, checking you, approving you. Once you get rid of him, you're free to write about everything you want. And that was just so good and so freeing. And that is really it. Once you're not there anymore to bridge over to the white person so that they understand you, it's like, no, I'm writing from my perspective and you're gonna do the work, because I have to do that the other way around anytime. And I'm actually not writing for you. So you can put yourself in my shoes if you want to, but if not, that's totally fine for me. And I'm just gonna write my story because it's good, you know? And that was just like, she's just... When she won the Nobel Prize, the Nobel Prize for Literature, she was asked, like, why did you get the Nobel Prize? And she was like, you know what? I write well.
Thank you, bye.
And that was it. And yeah, So activate the inner Toni Morrison in you. That's a long way to go, but, and good luck with that, but do it.
Yeah, such a great advice. I think freeing is definitely the word, because at some point when you realize that, wait a minute, why am I always trying to use certain vocabulary, code switch, make people comfortable when I just want to write my shit? So fucking do it. And I think that's definitely one of the aspects how I'm inspired, and I'm just so grateful and amazed by the work of this auntie who's now a beloved ancestor, because she owned her shit so much, and she was always like, I'm not writing for y'all though. So if y'all not happy, that's your problem. We've been reading your stuff forever. Let us, you know, reclaim our time and just, you know, focus on ourselves now. What's good? And I love this. I love, love, love this.
So powerful, right?
Yes, 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 really. The best. Third, but not least, I want to talk about The Art of Discarding by Nagisa Tatsumi. Nagisa Tatsumi is a Japanese author, and this book actually was the book that inspired the very famous now Marie Kondo and the very famous Netflix show on getting rid of things and asking yourself what actually sparks joy. It was really fun to find information on her online, but she's, yeah, from what I know, just a very inspiring woman, and this book was for her from one day to another, complete success. The book got sold out, and it was just very inspiring for a lot of people in Japan and around the world. And basically the author, so Nagisa, urges us to reflect on our attitude to possessing things and to have the courage and conviction to get rid of all the stuff we really don't need. She offers advices on how to tackle the things that pile up at home and take back control. By learning the art of discarding, you will gain space, free yourself from accumulation syndrome, and find new joy and purpose in your clutter-free life. And so, I mean, it doesn't appear to be the most political book out there, but I really do believe that it can be freeing to get rid of shit, but also of people, of psychological burdens, of intergenerational trauma. So I encourage my sister to get on it, as it can be really relieving and applies to many more aspects of our lives, to discard and surround ourselves purely with the best energies, with the most amazing friends, the most appreciating lovers, the best state of mind, and to always, basically, you know, we're always at the forefront of every fight, every mission, every friend's emergency call, every family reunion, every last minute work meeting. And it's just unbelievably important to free, you know, some mind space for the stuff that are super important in our lives. So The Art of Discarding is just a really very inspiring book in that way, even though it focuses on material stuff. And in all honesty, it is very binary and heterosexual oriented. But, you know, there's also a lot of punchlining. I think I just love to read things that just punchline me and I'm like, that hurt. But felt good. I feel better now. So one punchline that she talks about that follows one of the strategy when she explains why this strategy works. And I love this because she was really owning the strategy that she proposed. She knows it works. So this chapter starts saying why this strategy works. Like strategy 3, this creates a lot of opportunities to throw things away. You set a period so that you won't just keep things forever after you stop using them. Once the allotted time expires, you get on and discard them. No ifs or buts. You thought they might be useful sometimes, but sometime isn't coming. You know that now. In due course, you might get better at deciding fast what's necessary and what's not, and then you'll stop hiding behind those phrases. If you think the period I've chosen is too short or too long, so that things are accumulating, you can always make adjustments. And I read this and I was like, wow, I loved it. Basically, you thought you were better, you're not, so get over yourself and get rid of shit. This is really what I needed to read. This just related and resonated with me so much, because I really feel like my place is full of shit, for example, and just stuff that I'm not using. And she talks about books.
Complete bullshit, by the way. I've seen cluttered spaces like mine, but okay, please.
I just feel like I keep, you know, I hold on to like beautiful flyers that I collected in this cafe in fucking Prague somewhere in 2018. And I'm just like, anyway, so that really helps. And as you know, I'm that radical sister who loves to break up with undeserving friends. So I think that also helps in that way.
Here we go. So in this way, it's really radical, actually. You were saying it's not political, but it is. I mean, it's also how you read it.
I think, you know how it is. Like a white woman in her 20s from a bourgeois family would not find it political.
And wouldn't find the radical notion. But if you read it, you see, oh, okay, no, that actually means like getting rid of the clutter in every aspect of my life and transforming my own life and defining my own terms. And that is, yes. I mean, if that's not radical, I don't know what
it is. Right? Yes. just to finish what was supposed to be a bonus, very short episode that is now a 30 plus minute one, I would just love to celebrate two things, two spaces. The first thing is a beloved podcast by three Black sisters who are amazing. So there's Sarah Ozo-Irabor, whose books and rhymes on social media, and who's a Bookstagram reviewer and photographer and culture critic. Book blogger Zara Nesbitt Ahmed, whose book Shy Books on social media, writer, editor, and translator from Guinea-Bissau. Jovanka Paquette-Perdigão, whose post-colonial child. These three women will make you laugh your life away. They are hilarious, so, so funny, snarky, sharp, also obviously very smart. And they host the podcast, Not Another Book Podcast, which is just really one of the best podcasts I'm listening to at the moment. It takes basically a very brutally honest, nuanced, and witty take on African writing and literary culture. So whenever you have time, it's around 30 minutes, I think, the episodes. They're just really, really cool, very funny, contemporary, and quite hype, actually, at the moment. So get on that and support the sisters, who are book lovers as well. And the second thing is a great space that's in Brussels, and that is a bookstore that's called Pépite Blues, and that's owned by a Black woman who I'd love to celebrate real quick. Her name is Celestina Georges, and she's also from Angolan descent. Look at me celebrating all the Angolan sisters out there. It's a Brussels-based bookshop that focuses on literature produced by writers from African descent, and I'm more and more into supporting business owned by Black women and women of color. She's, like I said, a fellow Angolan, and she's also an unbelievably smart, interesting, cultured, and warm woman who studied philosophy and still gives lectures and conferences and stuff. And it's just great having conversations with her. So if you need to buy a book, maybe, you know, skip on the Amazon or on the big store thing and just go to her if you're based in Brussels.
Awesome. Amazing. I have only one last book that I'm reading at the moment that I can't give you like the whole picture now. So also no spoilers. But I'm reading a book that is just amazing right now. It's so interesting. It's called Kindred by Octavia Butler. And it's a story about a Black woman, I think in the 90s, who suddenly gets sucked into the past of her ancestors in the era before the Civil War. Every time her great-great-grandfather gets in trouble, of course, a white man, and she has to save him because only then can she return back to her time and be the person who she would actually be if her ancestors were saved. But of course, for a Black woman in the 1850s, it's a tremendously dangerous journey, and wow, it's just really such a must read. Get on that. It's extremely interesting, and I think I'm gonna read it tonight, and then it's gonna be over, and then I don't know what to do with my time. Maybe record the next episode.
Hey.
So yeah, thank you so much for following us this year, 2019, which was a big year for everybody, but especially the two of us. No,
it was an intense but beautiful year.
It was so much changed, so much good things stayed the same. Friendship,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Sisterhood,
yeah. Bad things were dropped because we get rid of clutter. And I think we're ready for 2020, no?
So ready. Yo, I've been telling my friends, 2020, we flip tables. That's all I have to say.
She's been saying that since 2018, but we're also doing that. I mean, we are, right? All right, so thank you very much for following us this year, and see you again next year, and follow us on our journey. We love you.
We love you, lovers.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Vocal About It. If you're digging our real talks, show these sisters some love. Talk about the podcast to people around you. Give us a little 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Drop some comments on SoundCloud or any other podcast platform you're listening on. Do follow us on Twitter and Instagram with the handle @vocalabout_it. And if you have any questions, love declarations, or that you want to partner for some cool shit, drop us a good old email at vocalaboutit@gmail.com.